I've been struggling with my shopping addiction for the past 20, maybe 20 some odd years. I think I was about 13 years old when the first time I went shopping and got, you know, some things that I probably shouldn't have gotten. It was, you know, we paid for some things and then I stole some things. If you came to my house, I have piles of clothes. My closets are all full. And my dressers are all full. I'll buy clothes just so I don't have to do laundry. Every time I come and see my mom, she says that it seems like you always have something new on. I might wear the stuff maybe once or twice and then it gets in the pile and I go buy something else. I have stuff at home that is correlates to almost the same thing, but why do I go buy that when I could have used what I had at home? It's like a reward aspect of, oh, I deserve that, so I go buy it. I like antiques, and I really don't need them. I mean, they're sitting around in boxes in my house. Why do I have to go buy more? That's kind of a, but I like the stuff, you know? It can be with anything, even with makeup. I've bought makeup, and I have tons of makeup at home, but why did I buy more? I guess it's just the idea that it made me feel better that I could get something new versus using my old stuff. I don't know. Sometimes I feel unhappy. And if I buy something, it makes me feel happier. So that could be one of the degrees of why I shop. To make myself happier.
Welcome to Unhooked. I'm Dr. Kitty, and today we'll be talking about shopaholics. With us today is our guest, Dr. Kelvin Thompson. Thank you for being here. You know, when I think of shopaholic, or when people might be thinking of it, they'll be thinking, oh, a woman who's buying all the name brands and she can't stop shopping. What it really is a shopaholic?
Yeah, the stereotype is somebody with just arms filled with shopping bags. But one of the big differences is shopaholics often keep what they do secret. But one of the things is that there is just a sense that I can't really feel satisfied in life unless I'm out shopping and accumulating things, filling my closet. The biggest thing about a shopaholic is, number one, can't stop. Number two, they tend to think about purchases a lot of the time, even when they're not shopping. But another criteria is somebody who, in some way, that their shopping is interfering with other things in life that are important to them. You know, it might be interfering with their marriage, it might be messing with their finances, pushing them to the brink. But you asked about the person who's a shopaholic. Actually, this is one that is what we call gender dimorphic. In other words, it is more likely to happen to women. About 80% of all shopping addictions are with women. Now, there's other addictions that are more particular to men, but shopping does tend to lean more on the side of women. However, there are men, definitely men, who also have the same problem.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between a shopaholic or a compulsive spending? Is that a different category?
Yeah, shopaholic is kind of a vernacular term for it. The technical term has to do more with compulsive spending disorder, but it's really another name for the same thing. But the point is that spending can become an addiction just as much as a drug, just as much as a substance, even though it's what we call a process addiction. It still does the same things as even substance addictions. It gets a hold of you, you can't stop, you just feel like I need to be doing this. And something in life gets out of control.
Mm-hmm. What's happening, you know, with other addictions, we talk about how it affects the brain. I'm assuming we're talking this as an addiction as well. What's happening in the brain or the mind of the shopaholic?
Yeah, one thing that's interesting is there is actually probably a difference between the saver brain and the spender brain, some of which may have to do actually with genetics. That people who tend to be more savers, there's a little area in the brain called the insula that actually hurts. It kind of pulls them back and says, don't spend that money. And some people, of course, the Ebenezer Scrooge types have a very, very active insula. Mm-hmm. Some people are kind of more in the middle, and there's some people more on the spender side. And number one, the insula doesn't kick in and say stop. You know, in other words, there's an accelerator, but no brakes. And there's actually some people who experience kind of a euphoria when they're spending, you know, when they're shopping. It may not be with the things they actually have afterwards, but in the process of shopping, you know, when they're buying things, they get a kind of a euphoric reaction in the brain. Now, one interesting just bit of research is that spenders and savers tend to marry each other. Hmm. So you're more likely to marry your opposite.
Oh, very interesting. I'm just wondering, do persons, you know, when we talk about addiction, sometimes people talk about, well, I try to hide my habit so people don't know. Is that something that happens here as well?
Yeah, there's a variety of different ways that people who are compulsive shoppers will hide their habit. Often they will have a credit card that nobody else knows about. Often in a marriage situation, there will be the secret credit cards, and sometimes the credit cards that kind of roll over, the debt from one will get rolled onto another. And sometimes people can keep the balls juggling for quite a while before it catches up with them. But there's often ways that people will kind of hide something in the back of the closet, and they'll pull it out, and they'll say, oh, this is something I actually bought a long time ago, and you know, different ways that you know people try to cover from the significant other people in their life what they're doing with their shopping.
How, like, let's say I was married to a shopaholic. How would I know the difference between, you know, just some spending issues, finances, the economy, as opposed to that there's some signs that let me know that this is a problem?
Yeah, one of the signs of addiction is that people, it's something people use to modify their moods. And so, you know, you can enjoy shopping, you can do a good job of accumulating and building a good wardrobe, but it's not something you do to modify your moods in any significant way. But a shopaholic, you'll just notice that there's that kind of that anxiety, and if they're not getting to do that on a regular basis. And it's not just at times when the wardrobe needs a little bit of sprucing up. I mean, it doesn't matter what the wardrobe needs. It doesn't matter how many pairs of shoes are in the closet. You know, if you're a shopaholic, you just, you know, you need to do it even if you already have everything you need.
Is there something that it's masking or covering? Are there some psychological issues that might be happening for why somebody would really go to shopping as an addiction?
Yeah, several different perspectives on that. Number one, I think that any kind of addiction, there's often a certain amount of physiological predisposition. In other words, some people are more prone to one pattern, some people to another. And so we always have to look at physiology as factoring in somehow. And you know, you mentioned earlier talking about the spouse. One of the dynamics that often happens is you get what we call marital polarization. You know, one person says, you are not going to spend any money. And that actually makes the brain more likely to go into a binge mode. So we talk about that as marital polarization, but it often happens in relationships. So, you know, there's just a physiological craving aspect to it. But often shopaholic behavior is designed to say, I want to feel good about myself. And there's something about being in the store. You walk by those windows and you see all those beautiful displays. You imagine what it'd be like to be wearing those clothes. And, you know, just feeling like I will feel good about myself when I'm wearing those things. So frequently, it's something that covers a poor self-image. And as I say, it can be true of men as well. And men will sometimes buy clothes. Sometimes men will buy things like, you know, motorcycles or electronics or, you know, something that also has to do with that issue of, you know, now I feel better about myself. So it's often a matter of self-nurture. This is a good way that I can take care of myself. When I'm buying something, I just feel better.
So with the shopping, you're filling a need, that there's a psychological mm-hmm. need that would be doing.
Yeah, and sometimes actually, you know, people may have grown up in an environment of a lot of deprivation. You know, if you have the feeling like I didn't get enough love, you know, we were poor, we didn't get enough of just the basic necessities of life. And we do know that people who have the brain state of deprivation are more likely to try to find some way to nurture that part of themselves. And shopping is something that at least temporarily you know, you feel better, you feel filled, you feel attractive, you feel like the people on the media, but underlying is often just that sense of deprivation of some sort.
Very interesting, and we're going to continue this. We'll be taking a short break, and we'll be right back.
I just can't go to the store at all because I'll end up buying stuff and that we really don't need. I would buy things and I would get my bill up so high that, you know, they wouldn't give me no more credit. And I used to write checks, you know, for stuff that I didn't have the money in there. And I knew it would bounce, but why did I do that, you know? I mean, now that I've gotten older, I got tired of doing all these bad things. I guess how it unfolded was I went to my friend and she told me that, you know, do you need help? And I told her that I did. And so she started helping me and she prays with me. I feel comfortable with her, you know, to the point that I know she's not gonna look down on me for the problems that I have. And she gives me the strength to continue on. I know if I fall back or she'll still help me. She'll convince me to keep trying. To help me with my addictions, I go to church and I pray and I go to meetings. When I go to my meetings and I share, it makes me feel better. So when I go home and I see my behavior starting to go that way, I more or less try to stop and pray, because he knows everything what goes on in my life. And for me to change anything, I knew that was the avenue that I had to go to, was to go back to church and get closer to God for him to help me with my struggles that I go through. Because any other way, it's going to continue or possibly get worse.
Welcome back. And today we've been talking about Shopaholics with Dr. Thompson. Thank you. I was wondering, what do family and friends, how can they actually contribute to it to make this more difficult for the shopaholic? Or what can they do to help the shopaholic in their addiction?
Yeah, let me say first about some of the negative things that are going to probably make the problem a whole lot worse rather than better. And the first one is shame. You know, if people feel a sense of shame, you know, this is something very shameful that you're doing, that actually tends to increase addictive behaviors of all types. So this idea of, you know, ridicule, making a person feel ashamed of themselves, you know, when you do that, you actually increase the likelihood. Second thing is often you get into these polarized patterns like I mentioned before. And the idea, you know, that you're out of control, you have to stop spending, you know, that type of thing actually creates more of a sense of deprivation, more of a sense of marital polarization, where you have the spender and the saver, and they move way apart in their behavior. And so it's really important for the person who is more of the saver in the family or concerned about the spending to actually encourage the person to have a certain amount of just free discretionary money that they actually can spend, because that's less likely to create the sense of, you know, brain deprivation, and so the people are more likely to get the spending under control. So you don't want to shame people, you don't want to ridicule them, you don't want to just say, well, I'm going to clamp down on you and you're not going to spend any money at all. And it's kind of what I call the cold oatmeal approach, that, you know, the good life is one that's lived when you are, you know, feeling deprived, when you're feeling that there's nothing you can do to nurture yourself. But another thing I would just say is really important is that family members realize that the person who is spending really does need the affirmation. And sometimes it's just the word, you know, hey, you look beautiful. I really appreciate you. And just something that helps give the person a sense, I'm valued, I'm attractive, I'm desirable. You know, in this family, I'm safe, I'm secure, I'm loved. You know, and I know I belong when I'm with these people. So the more we can do to, you know, help people feel a sense of belonging, a sense of love, a sense of nurture, the more we can do to really lower the likelihood of addiction.
In some ways, meeting those needs in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, let's say I'm watching this program right now and I'm like, wow, that sounds like me and looks like I might have a problem. Do shopaholics need treatment? What should they do?
Yeah, several different things. I mean, number one, like I already mentioned, it's really important to look at the pleasure factor in life. The research, the brain research on addiction is very clear. One of the big predictors of addiction has to do with the brain not experiencing normal, healthy levels of pleasure. And that's the opposite of what we've been told. You know, a lot of times people, as I say, they have the cold oatmeal approach. Like when I was a kid, you know, I was told if I didn't eat my oatmeal at breakfast, it would be waiting for me after school, and you could turn it over, you know, it was a glob of oatmeal, and it was good for me. But the fact is, God's designed our brains to need healthy, appropriately contextualized pleasure, and just all the neurological research is really clear on that. So just things you can do that fill your life with legitimate, appropriate happiness. You know, listening to music, petting your cat, you know, giving somebody a hug, you know, just anything that in a God-given context builds pleasure into your life is certainly a part of it.
Would I ever need to go to a treatment or a counselor for this? Or?
Yeah, I mean, there's several other things about it. I mean, number one, another thing about it is we often discover that things that we're addicted to are in some way symbolic of needs that we have in our life. So, you know, just pay attention. You know, what is this symbolizing? What needs do I have? And allow the addiction to actually speak back to you. And so it tells you what the areas of need, what the deficits are. Now, there are treatments available. I mean, for example, what we call cognitive behavioral therapy can be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing we also talk about is just awareness. Because one thing that's true with compulsive behaviors, you know, we often think about it as, well, you're too pleasure-oriented or you're too aware of your longings. Well, actually, people who are more aware of what's happening in their bodies, more aware of their feelings, are often able to let those feelings kind of ride like a wave and kind of sweep over them and then dissipate.
Mm-hmm.
But what often happens with people who are compulsive or addictive is as soon as the impulse hits, they immediately act on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so just staying in touch, being aware, okay, what am I feeling right now? What are some of my options? I mean, like with shopping, one thing a person can do is, I won't go to the mall unless I'm going with a friend.
Right.
Or I won't go and shop and buy things the first time I see them. I'll give myself a 24-hour waiting period. I'll look at it, I'll enjoy it, say, hey, I like that. But I won't actually buy it until, you know, 24 hours later. Then I can come back and get it.
I'm assuming with technology today that perhaps the internet or access to the web might have also done things to help shopaholics have access.
Mm-hmm. It makes it a lot easier. Actually, earlier I was talking about some of the brain research. One of the interesting things, I talked about a little area called the insula that acts as a break to keep you from overshopping. One thing we know is that even if you have a functional insula, if you buy something on credit, it bypasses the normal mechanism in the brain that slows you down and keeps you from spending. So one of the things that helps keep you safe is if you decide, I'm going to only go to the mall or wherever you like to shop and take the cash with me, or perhaps a checkbook. But we do know that spending with plastic actually has a different effect on your brain. And that's one of the things that makes it so easy. If you're home in your Barca lounger, you know, you're just watching all these images parade before you, and, you know, all you have to do is, you know, call in something or type in something, and there it is. It kind of bypasses the normal braking mechanisms in the brain.
Wow, it sounds so informative to hear about how something that people think is just, I'm going shopping, is actually something that has a huge neurochemistry and addiction to it. And just from hearing you say things that God made us beautifully and wonderfully, and that's a part of the healing. Thank you so much for being with us today to talk about this topic. Unhooked will be right back.
I just know that God has a purpose for me, and I just have to keep on asking Him for help, because I can't do it by myself. I still struggle with all of my addictions, you know, on a daily basis, to the point that I have to give it to God. Every day when I pray, I feel more confident about continue on, you know, in my struggles. Every day He'll make it a little easier. That's what gives me hope, is with knowing that He's there to help me. Without God helping me through this, I wouldn't be able to make it.
Dr. Thompson shared with us about compulsive shopping. Shopping is a problem for far too many people. They use shopping as a way of making them feel better about themselves or filling a void in their lives. Tammy was one of those. She still struggles with shopping, but daily she's learning more and more to depend upon God. Sometimes people who struggle with addictions struggle with very hard questions of God. Questions like, Lord, I'm hurting. I've been hurting all my life. Why, Lord, did you let this happen? Where were you when this was going on? Those kinds of questions come from deep, deep within. And often with those questions comes a lot of anger. Anger at God. It's misplaced anger, but it's anger nonetheless. God is not put off by those questions. In fact, God welcomes those kinds of questions. We find in the scriptures Job asking those questions. We find David asking those kinds of questions. And we also find God answering those questions. And isn't that good news? That God is willing to take us where we are, no matter what we're struggling with, no matter what our questions are, no matter how we're hurting. God wants to deal with us just where we are. He takes us where we are and then gently and lovingly moves us to where we want to be. And in doing so, He is establishing intimacy with us, because He knows that when we ask Him those kinds of hard questions related to our addictions, that it really is an attempt on our part to be intimate with God. God loves intimacy, even if it is in the form of a hard question. And I want you to know that God is interested in answering those questions for us personally. He says to us, my child, let me show you where I was. Let me show you what I was doing. I have a story about your story. I know you were hurt, and I'm so sorry that you were hurt in this process. But I am the solution to your hurt, and I am the answer to all your questions. For more information about how you can break away from habits that hurt, contact Adventist Recovery Ministries. For prayer, call 1-888-446-7388. Choose to become unhooked today.